The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
What's up? I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we have a ton of comics to talk about. So let's get right into it. We got a big one right here. X-Men, number one. From Marvel, written by Jen McKay, art by Ryan Stegman. Now, per the number one, this is a brand new property about a bunch of heroes who have powers that are mutant powers, and they fight to protect humans, despite the fact that they're hated and feared, which I think is a really interesting concept. I'm joking. This is actually the first title.
Got pause for all the people just rolling around in laughter right now.
Oh, my God. Yeah, we should probably take, like, what do you think? 5 minutes? 10 minutes? Something like that?
Oh,
that was
man.
Very funny.
Oh, it's just so topical.
Anyway, this is the first book for the From the Ashes era, which is picking up from Krakoa, the previous era that Pete hated and I loved. So I've been very curious to talk about this book to give you a little bit of the groundwork here. This is having Cyclops leading a team out of Alaska, out of an abandoned Sentinel factory that includes Beast, Quentin Quire, Magneto, Tempest, I think her name is now. What?
Temp?
I think it's Tempest. Anyway, and Psylocke is also on the team, and Magic. And ostensibly, they are very much in that world hates and fears them, but they are going to save it anyway mode. We're getting a bunch of extensions of a new group who wants to be the X-Men but hates the X-Men, some shadowy villains in the background, some classic X-Men stuff going on. Now, Pete, I've been very curious to hear from you what
temper,
you think about
you're
this
right on the...
Oh, temper. You know, is it temper, not tempest?
Yeah, it's temper.
Yes, and you just showed this to me. I'm going to give a quick shout-out. It's not on the front cover, but we talked about it, I believe, last week. They got the heads on the page.
Yeah.
Which is cool. I want to talk about the whole format of the book, but before we even get into that, what'd you think, Pete? You were a original Krakoa hater. Now that we're out of that era, how do you feel? And I mean that legitimately. I'm curious to see if you feel like, yes, this is the fresh start I've been waiting for.
Yeah, so first off, fan-fucking-tastic cover. Has like this old school feel to it, which I really like. It gets you excited to read The Promise of New Beginnings, which I'm like, yes, let's put all the BS behind us. Let's start. I feel good about it. I do feel like this is a good number one, you know? What sucks is you got the same crappy leader with a fresh face team, but what are you going to do? You can't have everything. But yeah, I do think I love this. I thought this was great. We got a different kind of look to this team. Had kind of a twist at the end, but also, I don't know what beast this is, and if we can trust this beast at all. You know, his face is a little kind of like...
So this gets to my problem here. I will also say, love Ryan Stegman's art in general. His beast is weird, to your point. It doesn't look right. This is the beast who, as he indicates in the issue, was a clone with a backup memory from the My Stars and Garters era of the Beast. So he kind of knows what he has been doing in the intervening time on Krakoa, but he is from way before that. He's from, like, I think like the rooming with Wonder Man and being on the Avengers era of the Beast. So that's who we're getting here.
I thought it was the Beast that got cloned and was then fighting Wolverine, evil Beast, one of those Beasts.
No, this is the good Beast who is a scientist. It is.
Let's use quotes around good. We don't know yet.
I mean, I won't, because that's who he is.
Well, we just had to have a giant evil beast battle not too many issues ago where there were tons of evil beasts running around. This guy says he's a clone and you're ready to trust him? Like, okay. Come on, bro. Let's be smart about
this. Here's actually my problem with this book is I generally enjoyed this, but as a clean start, I disagree with you. This 100% is not. The amount of insane continuity that's going on here is so difficult to parse for anybody. I would not hand this to a new reader ever. Like, never in my life would it be like, you want to find out about X-Men? Here you go.
It's check out X-Men number one. Dude. What are you talking about?
It is number one, but it is. I wish there was a clean break from the Krakoa era. I wish they weren't so respectful from it. I wish they just jumped into it with something new and fresh and interesting. I think. Not to intuit, I think we're going to get that from Uncanny X-Men number one number next month, because that's what that feels like. But this is like deep continuity stuff with Jed McKay sort of giving a Grant Morrison style riff on these red AIM hazmat suit costume characters who want mutant powers, love mutants, but hate mutants, where I'm just like, this is too much. This should not be the first issue out of the gate. As an X-Men fan, I get all of this. But if you really are trying to create a clean runway to get into the X-Men, this isn't it. On the other hand, I want to say very positively, like I talked about the heads, I love the magazine format of this book. That was thrilling to me as an old school fan, and that almost could, you know, contradicts what I just said. But like throughout the book, they have the heads identifying everybody. They have a quick recap on the credits page. But then they also have like a very old school bullpen style two-page thing in the middle of the issue where they're talking about what's coming up in the X-Men, what's happening right now in X-Men number one. They ask everybody, what was your first X-Men issue? Everybody has very bad answers. I just want to mention that.
Don't judge people's answers. It's not like you can what your first X-Men book
all
was.
All of them are like, I don't know. I picked up an issue of X-Men at a convenience store and it was great. I'm like, come on, give me something specific. Sons of bitches.
Some people's memories are a little shoddy, dude.
What was your first X-Men comic, Pete?
Jesus Christ. I don't remember. I can remember my first comic. I can remember my first Captain America comic. I can remember it was like my first Spider-Man comic, but I can't remember my first X-Men comic.
I don't remember the number, but mine was Mutant Massacre 100%. And I read that because I was reading Thor, I was reading Power Pack, and I was like, oh, this is a tie-in. I should read the X-Men comics. And I was like,
What are you arguing right now? That you're a better nerd? What's going on?
I think all these writers and artists should turn to their nerd cards. That's what I'm saying. I'm gatekeeping.
I would like to get back to this comic if we could. I thought it was funny having Quentin Quire trying to learn the fly the blackbird there. Mm-hmm. I thought that was kind of a nice thing. Temp seems chill. I was hoping it was like temper, like short for she has her huge temper. You know what I mean? I got excited about that, but that's not what happened. But temperature, so cool, still into it. And then kind of Magneto shows up, ruins the whole vibe, and we kind of get a little, spoilers, but a little twist at the end that they're not as friendly as they are portraying.
To back up what you're saying, other than the fact that this is not a great new number one to hand a fresh new reader, as a X-Men fan, I like this team dynamic. I think Jed McKay is a really good, solid writer. Everything that you mentioned is absolutely present in the book and interesting. Ryan Stegman's art, other than Beast, who is weird, is good. But I did like the romance, the burgeoning romance between Beast and the police chief at the Alaskan town that they're staying in. I'm 100% on board as an X-Men fan, but like, again, I want there to be something fresh and new at a clean break where I'm like, start here, and we're not quite there.
Yeah, it's hard to be like, hey, totally, forget everything that's happened. You know what I mean? We're going to start fresh here. You know, fuck you, all of the people who supported us and read this comic for years.
It is tough. I wish they had done that. You know, maybe I'm misremembering it, but I was thinking a lot about new X-Men while I was reading this, Grant Morrison and Frank Quitely. And that team was like, hey, man, we're going to distill it down to just the team we want to do. We're throwing in a bunch of crazy ideas. We're throwing in, like, Omega Sentinels. We're throwing in, it wasn't Omega Sentinels. It was, I'm forgetting the name, but, like, the Sentinel factories, the master molds. We're throwing in secondary mutations, all these insane ideas. But it's literally just, like, X-Men. They're fighting people. That's all you need to know. And then we're going to get the character dynamics and focus on them from there. This feels like right now the hangover from Krakoa. And I want us to move past that. That's all.
Well, at least it's Hangover 1 and not like Hangover 3. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they're really like dragging out the series.
And just so I got the gist of your notes, you're upset because Grant Morrison isn't writing this? Is that what you're saying? Jesus Christ, guy.
Yeah, you picked it up. Yeah, that's 100% what I'm saying. Yes.
All right. Let's move on to one that you enjoyed.
Oh, man. This is my most hyped issue of the week. Action Comics 1067 from DC Comics. Written by Gail Simone and Rainbow Rowell. Art by Eddie Barrows. Excuse me, I'm going to vomit with excitement. And Cian Torby, we are getting back after the House of Brainiac storyline to a Superman All-Stars, Superman Superstars, I think what they're calling it. And Gail Simone and Eddie Barrow's story is, I'm so contradictory here with my like deep continuity stuff, but it is back in the day when Superman, Lois, and Jimmy all worked for, I think it's WGBS, the TV station that was working out of the Daily Planet from like the early 80s or something like that. It reads like a John Byrne comic. That's 100% what she's going for, and it's wild. And then the backup story is Rainbow Rowell writing very like she does on She-Hulk, very grounded character story about Superman and Lois that finally gets to something that everybody has thought about a million times, where Lois is like, hey, Clark, you can't journalistically write stories about Superman. That's a conflict of interest. And I loved both of these stories. They're so totally different, but so great. I love this book.
I mean, that's kind of ridiculous. That's like Lois being like, you got to change more than your glasses, Supes. I mean, what are we doing here? You know what I mean? Like,
but she's right, though. And I mean,
it's like Spider-Man shouldn't take pictures of Peter Parker. I mean, what are we doing? That's true.
Here's the thing is that, like, this is a backup story in Action Comics, it takes place in continuity. I don't think we're going to end up with like Clark Kent can never work at the Daily Planet again, but she's right. I've worked in multiple newsrooms and you have to disclose these things. And the fact that Clark Kent is like, I'm going to write a piece about Superman, that's enormous conflict of interest.
Yes. Yes. In the reality of the world. Yes.
Yeah.
But that's not what we're doing here.
But that is what she's doing. She's writing, like she does on She-Hulk, romance comics. This is creating a conflict in the relationship between Lois and Clark that is not about, like, I'm attracted to another person, so I'm creating romantic stress. It is creating stress on the relationship in a different way. And that's great. Like, that is good tension that I want to read.
Okay. I'm glad you're
having
a great
time.
Did
you like it? Did you love it?
It felt like a classic Superman story. It felt weird because it was like making fun of Superman's deal a little bit. But yeah, I mean, you know, this is definitely an unbelievable team that they have on this. I'm excited about the talent that they have in there, and I'm excited to see what's going to happen.
You sound so bummed out right now. I think this is great. I think if you are looking for something that is
I hate seeing my parents fight. So watching Lois and Supes fight over the Daily Planet is a little bit like.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, and I appreciate that. But at the same time, having Lois and Clark.
Explorers. Don't say it like they're fucking Lois and Clark. You know what I mean? Like, come on, man.
The New Adventures of Superman. That's what I'm getting at.
Okay, great.
The thing that people often miss with married couples in fiction is there.
Look at this statement.
There can be tension that is not all about romantic tension, that there can be issues they need to work with that are dramatic and are big, but they don't have to be, now we're breaking up and that's it. And that's what Rainbow Rowell is doing here. And I think laudably so. I love the fact that she has found a pocket where Clark's like, yeah, man, I could write stories about Superman. I've been doing that for decades at this point. And Lois, who is now the editor in chief of the Planet, is like, you can't. I can't approve that. There are legal issues there and there are problems. And that creates the tension. But the tension is not about, oh, well, now they're going to break up and Lois and Clark are done forever. It's how do they get past this problem? And I don't know. So it's exciting. There's good tension. It's interesting.
I'm glad you're excited.
I am excited. From the world of minor threats, Barfly number one from Dark Horse Comics, written by Colin Starks, Patton Oswalt, and Jordan Bloom, art by Ryan Brown. We are following a henchman.
Shit Eater is now one of my new favorite characters. This is a glorious story. I mean, come on, dude. What's more underdog than this fly?
This is an all-star team, and this is a worthy addition to the Minor Threats universe, which is great. Bringing in Kyle Starts, who we love here on the show, Ryan Brown from Curse Words and Legend. 8 Billion Genies and everything. Great team to have here. And you got this fly who is silent the entire time, going on criminal adventures, but just trying to be his own man, and it's great stuff.
Yeah, it's touching. It's impressive what artistically is being done with a character who doesn't talk. He kicks butt. I love it. I love a short guy who doesn't take any shit. You know what I mean? It's just very moving and powerful, and it's nice to see. You know,
I see. You think you're the fly?
Who doesn't think they're the fly in this comic?
I don't know, man.
You don't wear Band-Aids all over your head when you get beat up?
Love him getting beaten up and having Band-Aids on his compound eyes. Great visual.
It's fun.
Yeah. Transformers number 10 from Image Comics, written by Daniel Warren Johnson, art by Jorge Corona. Big stuff going down in this issue as the Decepticons, I'm going to get to a spoiler here. Sorry about the spoiler. But are summoning Cybertron to the orbit of Earth.
It's a bad idea.
I've been not necessarily down on this book, but definitely like my thing is not metal dudes smashing against each other. But there's some great dramatic stuff that happens in this issue.
Yes, dude. This is emotional ish alert, dude. This is going to get you in the feels. I mean, again, spoilers, but like when Soundwave like is trying to put Ravage back together and they're like, there's no time. I was like, oh, Soundwave. Oh, that was some great stuff. I mean, I love what's going on. This continues to be such a great comic and such a fun nostalgia bath and all the great waves. Amazing art, fantastic action, some real issues here. I love this.
Dealing with some real issues, like a planet coming into the orbit of another planet?
No, I'm talking about people dealing with loss, asshole. Oh,
whatever, man. Whatever. Never dealt with loss, but I have dealt with the thing that I mentioned. The Ultimates, number 2 from Marvel, written by Dennis Camp, art by Juan Fregari. The Ultimates, now assembled as a team, are making an assault on the White House to free whoever is in the basement from Midas, who has taken over the White House and bought it. This is a wild book that I think two issues in is absolutely living up to the Ultimate's name in terms of
you
crazy.
Want Ultimate, you got it.
100%. And the reminder here, particularly with every other book, kind of like Ultimate Black Panther is kind of a Black Panther story with a couple of tweaks, right? And Ultimate Spider-Man is a little bit of a twist on the familiar familiar Spider-Man story. Ultimate X-Men is doing its own thing in Japan. But the reminder here that, like, oh yeah, there's no United States in this universe is crazy. And the riffs that Dennis Cabbs does here, there's a great panel where a kid looks at Captain America's like, what do you think his A stands for? Which riffs off that classic Mark Millar moment of, what do you think my A stands? Do you think my A stands for France? And Captain America pointing to his head. Great stuff. Winky, fun, great character reveal at the end. I had a blast reading this book.
Yeah. It's in your face, ultimate action. So, yeah, this really does do a good job of living up to the title. And that's what I think you want from these kinds of books is like, okay, we know the regular universe. What would the ultimate kind of version be? And this is pushing some boundaries here on July 4th when you got a big brawl in the White House, America.
The other thing that I throw out there is that Ultimate Spider-Man has felt like the backbone of this new line, but as of issue two, it feels like that very quickly pivots to the Ultimates, which it should be. We get a bunch of great sequences peppered throughout where Captain America lives through virtual reality, the alternate history of this multiverse, and it's dark and it's upsetting. It's hard to read. But great stuff. This is big storytelling in the way that only comics can.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
From the DC Vault, Death of the Family, Robin Lives, number one from DC Comics, written by J.M. DeMatteis, art by Rick Leonardi. This book is basically, what if you all were in Jerks back in the day and killed Jason Todd, and instead we're picking up with the Joker has died instead. The strong implication is that Jason Todd killed him, and Batman and Gotham City is reeling from that. What'd you think, Pete?
This is fun. It's got such a cool old school vibe to it on purpose. Touching ending. Really fantastic art. I loved it. A lot of twists and turns. And it's a fun choice to revisit, I think.
I agree. I like this a lot more than I thought I would. And it is down to that old school feel. It looks and reads.
Are you mad that you voted to kill Robin?
I didn't. I didn't have access to a phone at that point. I was very young. I was basically a fetus.
Whoa, okay.
What was I saying? I don't know.
I don't know. You did a big sigh there that you were pissed.
I'm not sure. I lost my train of thought. Why don't we move on? Talk about...
You were just like, oh, man, I was a fetus. It was a tough time. You couldn't use phones of Venuses back then. You couldn't...
Mama, let me use phone.
I get one collect call. you were probably talking about the death of the family and, you know, how much you like the different choices that are made in this issue.
Yeah, I think it's good. I think if you're a fan of that, it feels of a piece of Death of the Family. The Domain, number one from Image Comics, written by Chip Zdarsky, art by Rachel Stott. This is spinning off of the Public Domain title that Chip Zdarsky has been writing and drawing that is all about a real-world comic book creation. Here we're getting to see that comic book in action, which is very interesting. Pete, what'd you think?
Yeah, I think this is kind of super interesting. I just think that space and the kind of the bracelets that kind of make superheroes, the space bracelets, is a fun thing to kind of play with, you know, this kind of like uber version of yourself that you get to turn into a little bit would be, I mean, if I was going to roll up on some aliens, that would be the best case scenario to find those space bracelets. You know what I mean?
I thought this was okay. I wanted this to take a bolder stab in some direction. You know, maybe the idea.
So you wanted, like, you put on a space bracelet and then you're kind of, you're now on Wall Street
and you can make different decisions. And this is more of a global thing, but it is very tough when you do something about people creating something fictional to let it match up to the actual thing. And I say that like when you're doing a movie where somebody says, hey, this is the best band in the world. When they play a song, oh my God, it better be the best song in the world. Or at least it better be feel like part and parcel with that, what you would expect from that sort of band. And a lot of the times it's just not. Here, we're getting a comic, public domain, where they're creating a comic. And this comic is like, it's a good, solid superhero comic. And that's it. And maybe that's the idea here, is ultimately what they're creating with the domain is like, yeah, that's a good superhero comic. But I want something that has a bigger, bolder, wilder take. Maybe that would adversely affect public domain. But as is, since this is...
Maybe they're... lulling you to sleep a little bit and making you think it's about Superman stuff, superhero stuff, but it's going to be bigger.
Maybe it might be bigger. I'm like, I like these characters and I like what's happening here and I like that it exists. I appreciate the fact that they've spun this out into a real comic book, but it feels so relatively generic. Like there's a little bit of Green Lantern, there's a little bit of Sentry going on here that I wanted something bigger and more interesting for this book.
Okay.
Pete, can we get to our blood block?
Yes, finally. We need some like music and graphics. So like, welcome to the blood hunt.
In general, we need some music blood and graphics. Hunt. If anybody is listening to this and they are an audio producer, please, blood for the love hunt. Of God, help me out. I'm dying
welcome to
here.
The blood hunt. Welcome to the blood hook.
I like that you just blasted past all that sad thing that I was saying. Yeah. The Incredible Hulk, Blood Hunt number one from Marvel, written by Philip Kennedy Johnson, art by Danny Earle. Hulk might be the only person who can't die by getting bitten by vampires. So, of course, he goes to a small town and gets attacked by them. This is one of my favorite issues of Incredible Hulk in a while. I thought this was a great one-shot. Sort of like a mix between The Descent with the Hulk in the middle of it. Great stuff.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
What are you nodding your head no about? What's going on?
I was like, I was with you, and then you said The Descent kind of stuff. I think this is so much better. But anyways,
have you watched The Descent?
Yeah, amazing cover. I think this rocks. I love this so much. Kind of amazing, touching, almost twisted story, but with beautiful art. I just love every panel of this. The way the story starts, the slow build to action, just, it's not really in the Blood Hunt, but they do talk about how the Blood Hunt has affected this story. So it is in the Blood Hunt universe, and it didn't feel too shoehorned in there. So I just felt like, whatever, this was just such a cool Hulk issue and done artistically in such a fun way that I had such a blast with this. It was, you know, we read a ton of comics and this really just kind of refreshed me, made me have hope about the world again. It was just such a nice comic that I really
Danny Earle's art is great in this. We get to see a bunch of vampires who live under the ground in a very sunny desert style.
You know, the
area.
Ground vampires. People ground don't talk vampires. About the ground, but yeah.
It's terrifying. It's like vampire hell, and it's really cool to see. It's very well done. All the Hulk stuff is well done as well. Like, a lot of this title, and we love, obviously, Philip Kennedy Johnson here on the show, but it's gotten very big and arch, and there's some deep mythology going on. Getting a very Tales from the Crypt style episode thrown in here in the middle Very good. Really, I mean, like this issue.
It also does such a great job of like just starting with this kind of like story about this man telling kind of the tale of mm-hmm. a town and all this stuff. And you're just like, the fuck does this got to do? And then you're just kind of like, oh my God. Yeah. Just smart writing, unbelievable action. And it's worth it for the art alone.
Yeah. This is, if you're a Hulk fan or interested at all in Bloodhunt, this is a great one to just pick up and read versus what we were talking about with X-Men before. This is just a good one-shot issue. Very happy with this. Union Jack the Ripper, Bloodhunt number 3 for Marvel, written by Kevin Scott, art by Kev Walker. This is the final issue here as we find out what has been going on as vampires invade England. Some big stuff goes down. Pete, what do you think about this one?
Yeah, I really love this as well. It's got a fun kind of Hellboy vibe to it. Great issue, tons of action. Love the villains' game plan. Love the kind of there's a lot going on here, but I just thought it was like a cool, well executed idea in the middle of all this madness, and it was fun to see kind of Union Jack kicking some butt.
Shout out to the Kev Walker art in this issue. The designs are great. The villain reveal of this issue is great. How they eventually take down the villain is so gross when it happens in exactly the way that you want from a vampire crossover. So good stuff there. Speaking of great art, Wolverine. Yes, Pete.
I just wanted to take a quick moment here. Somewhere in the middle of this blood hunt, we have this very touching memoriam to Don Perlin, and I just thought they did a really nice job with that.
And he died of vampires, I believe.
So he did work on a werewolf book.
I'm so sorry. Wolverine Bloodhunt number 3 from Marvel, written by Tom Waltz.
When you die, I hope somebody does so many bits about you and like just fucking rips you.
That would make me so happy when I'm in hell, probably, I assume. Wolverine Bloodhunt number 3 from Marvel, written by Tom Waltz, art by Juan Jose Rip. Wolverine is going after Maverick, has been turned into a vampire, and thinks he's going to be the king of the vampires, except oopsie daisy, looks like it might be Wolverine. This is just leading into the Juan Jose Rip art here with big fight scenes that are gross and bloody. Good stuff.
Yeah, I mean, this is what you want from a blood hunt, where it's just kind of like Wolverine ripping through vampires and then kind of having this plan and then the fun twist and then, oh shit, is Wolverine going to be the king of the vampires? Like, what's going to happen here? And I believe that was a what if one time that I read.
Could be. Last but not least, let's talk about the Avengers number 16 for Marvel, written by Jed McKay, art by C.F. Villa. This is the final issue of this arc as Captain America leads a bunch of substitute Avengers to take out Baron Blood. As I have said with every issue here, this is easily the best arc we've had on Avengers from Jed McKay so far, and that all comes down to just great characterization here. Exactly the dynamics I want to see from an Avengers book. Captain America doing some killer Captain America stuff throughout. There's a big Quicksilver book as well. Like, he gets some great hero moments. Man, this is what I wanted on this book regularly, which thus far, up until Bloodhunt, has felt like a bunch of people having a business meeting and has been bumming me out. Here we're getting like classic Avengers stuff, and it's great to see.
Yeah, a lot of great action, fun kind of stuff. I mean, Captain America bringing back the sun, that's huge. You know what I mean? Like, what a hero. Yeah,
I love that moment. Like, he takes the helicarrier that Blair Blood is on and is like, hey, man, we're going to fly this above the sun. Oops, vampires. That's great.
Suck it.
The whole everything with Pietro, where Captain America is first like, hey, you're really good at messing things up. Go do that. Great. And then Pietro being like, got it, I'm on it. And then the final twist with Pietro and Kate Bishop? Nope. Hawkeye. Kate what?
Oh my god.
I forgot her name. Anyway, Hawkeye 2 teaming up. We know comics. We've only been doing this for a while. Anyway, them teaming up, I thought was Kate great
Bishop
as well.
Is Hawkeye, but like I,
yeah, it's
I
Kate did, Bishop.
For some reason, I was like, it's not. But you're right; it is Kate Bishop. Why we?
Thank you, my goodness. Yeah. The Hercules hazmat stuff as well. Great characterization. Love seeing them together. So good. This is the Avengers that I want to read, and I was very, very happy.
I was interested to talk to you about the end there, where I think it's like the second last panel or something, where he's like, oh crap, I missed, and something seems to happen. I'm wondering if you had any theories about that or.
So Captain America has a different shield right now. Yeah. He tries to take down Baron Blood. He can't. And so he ultimately ends up missing because that has a different weight than his regular shield. Pietro, though, has a plan on plan, and his plan is to send Hawkeye out. And as far as we know, Hawkeye shoots Baron Blood with a silver-tipped arrow, which at the very least is going to hobble him, if not take him out permanently. Obviously, they're leaving it up to the next creative team, but I thought that was a great ending there.
I thought you were talking about one turned up, teamed up with Hercules. That's why I was like, first shaking you off there. I apologize.
No problem. Why don't we turn from our blood block to our power hour as we talk about the absolute power books. DC Comics. Pete giving a big thumbs down here if you're listening to the audio podcast. Let's kick it off talking about Absolute Power, Tax Force 7, number one from DC Comics, written by Leah Williams, art by Caitlin Yarsky. So the idea of this book is this is a sort of anthology following the various Amazo robots that Amanda Waller has sicked on the DC Universe to suck their powers. Here we're following an Amazo robot that seems to be like a Superman family robot that's gone after the Shazamly, if you will. I thought this was very good. I like the danger here for the Shazamly. I love seeing Billy and Mary try to get out of things without their powers. The Black Adam cameo was great. And as always, I am in love with Caitlin Yarsky's art. Just great stuff.
Okay. So I agree with a couple of statements you said there.
Interesting.
Bananas, just absolutely fantastic. You're right. The Black Adam stuff was great, but that's about as far as I'm going to agree with you. You know, she's manipulating people all over the place, and you really felt for that purple guy that, you know, so I don't know. I'm hoping this is going to get fun at some point, but right now I'm not having a good time.
Purple guy meaning Parasite?
Yeah.
Oh, great. I like the mystery with the Amazos. There's something going on with them that's interesting to me. So we'll see what happens. Why don't we move on, though, and talk about the second Absolute Power book, Green Lantern, number 13, from DC Comics, written by Jeremy Adams and Mark Guggenheim, art by Fernando Persarin and Matthew Clark. Hal Jordan is powerless and has been captured by Amanda Waller and King Shark and tied to a very conspicuously Green Lantern symbol, crucifix type thing. I don't know how they built that, but they did. And ultimately, it's about him and how he escapes. And then in the backup story, we're getting some other stuff happening in the world of Green Lanterns, continuing the ongoing story. I thought this was great, a great Hal Jordan story. I love the King Shark stuff. I love how he pushes forward with no powers. I continue to really like this event, as clearly Pete does not.
Yeah, I mean, oh, man, dude. Like when King Shark was just beating up Hal Jordan and then Waller was just watching. Oh, that was great comics. You're right. I'm having a blast, you know.
It's fun. Then, I like watching people beat the shit out of people.
Hey, that's cool. But then, like, you know, I like Rocky, a.k.a. King Shark. You know what I mean? But then he got chained up at the end, and I was like, nobody wins in this comic. But it was fun to see Sinestro turn into a Red Lantern. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Yeah, why not? Could be.
Yeah.
Could be. You don't like Green Lanterns anyway. So why don't we close down our power hour and move on to other comics. Ain't No Grave, number 3 from Image Comics, written by Scotty Young, art by Jorge Corona. In this issue, our main character, who is dying and trying to confront death to get some extra life, ends up gambling to move forward in her journey. This is a great issue of this book. I was a little iffy about it in issue 2. I felt like they were spinning their wheels a little bit. We get back on track here on a casino boat. Good stuff.
Yeah, first off, glorious cover. Just absolutely fantastic. Yeah, I would really love this issue. I thought the art style was so cool and just really brought you into this twisted kind of world. Loved all the action, adventure, and just fantastic evil villain character design there. I'm also a sucker for the old kind of like trying to outsmart somebody at a card table type of situation. So I thought that was a blast and a fun story. So yeah, I thought this was a fantastic package.
Yeah, I agree. Scotty Young is doing a great job here. Jorge Corona also doing a great job. They're clearly a team that knows how to work with each other, and that has come to bear here. Kill All Immortals, number 1 from Dark Horse Comics, written by Zach Kaplan, art by Fico Osseo. Go listen to our interview with Zach Kaplan about this very book on the live show.
Too bad we couldn't talk to him about this issue.
Son of a bitch.
Yeah.
How dare you?
Yeah, it's just, to be honest, since he's not here, I agree with that. Everything that we said on the show. I think this is such a great first issue. Does such a good job of like getting you pumped by the end. You know what I mean? That kind of last panel reveal really kicks us into another gear. And I think it's artistically phenomenal. And it's a fun, interesting story and great kind of setup.
I love the title here, which, like we talked about in the show, is such a walking through the comic shop being like, okay, prove it to me. And then the book actually proves it to you in terms of following this character, Frey, who is in love with a regular human being, takes her home to meet her family, and it turns out they're all immortals. They are the descendants of Leif Erikson. They're very not so loosely modeled on Norse gods, and they're trying to kill each other. And
I'd say that's a red flag. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like if you go out on a date with somebody and then they get murdered in front of you and then they're like, listen, totally, I'm immortal. That's a red flag. You know what I mean? Yeah. I don't know if you get a second date.
I don't know. I mean, it's kind of nice because you're like, well, I never have to watch them die.
All right. I mean, yeah, that's a plus. It's not where I go on first dates, but, you know, what are you going to do? Yeah. But like,
always my first date question is, am I going to have to watch you die? And if I
really want to watch you die, are you going to rob me of that? Or like, what's your, I like to size up who's going to die first on a first date. You know what I mean? Yeah. Just kind of like, what's
okay,
your
real health? Quick. All right. Let's play a fun thought experiment. And it's weird, I've never gotten a second date.
Oh, man.
Huh.
Huh.
Anyway, this book is great. Fico Osseo's art is great. It's violent. It's bloody. Oh, yeah. I will mention we've got a peek at the second issue as well, and it only picks up from there. So this is a great one to get on board with. This feels like a big new comic. Amazing Spider-Man, number 53 from Marvel, written by Zeb Wells, art by Todd Knock and Ed McGuinness. Spider-Man is still wrestling with the fact that he has a spear filled with sins, and Green Goblin is manipulating him. Meanwhile, Miss Marvel and a group of ragtag heroes are trying to take Green Goblin down.
Yep. I want to say, and I thought about this a lot and how I want to word this. Great art. Great art. I think Zeb Wells is awesome. I don't know, man, though, like the spear and the sin jumping and the different.
Do you know what bothers me the most? And we talked about this.
That the robot exploded at the worst possible time? No. That's they just killed Rec Rap like it was nothing.
both of those things are things that I think are going to pay off next issue. The thing that bothered me the most was the way that he characterizes Kraven, or is this the son of Kraven, or whatever is going on here, where he's like, I've just watched the Sinister Six die. Now I must head off against the spear and watch the final battle begin. And it's like, I don't care. I am not emotionally involved in this whatsoever. Kraven is a guy who hunts people. Please let him hunt things again. That's all I want.
Let him hunt things again.
Hashtag let him hunt.
Oh my God, let him hunt.
All of this, though, feels so off, and it sucks. Like, I hate feeling this way because I don't want to be like, this is how comics should be, but Spider-Man kind of needs to be a certain way in stasis for its entire history. It does. It needs to be like, oh man, I'm Peter Parker, down on my luck, and I try to do something heroic. It is over the top. It pummels me. Ultimately, everybody hates me for doing this thing, but it was the right thing to do. We are getting 0% of that in this run on Amazing Spider-Man.
Well, whatever. I just think that they plan things out for so long, and it's just like, we just had this whole thing where everybody's jumping Doc Ock's in Peter Parker's body. Peter Parker's in Doc Ock's body. We're swapping around. It's the whole thing. And we've been doing that. And that was super popular. So then they're like, what if the spear can make use? And you're just like, can I just get Spider-Man fighting Green Goblin and like stop with this who's really in there running the thing? And I
totally agree with you. And I also want to agree with nothing against Zeb Wells, Todd Knock, Ed McGuinness. They're doing their job.
They're all great. All yes. Great.
I cannot wait for this era of Amazing Spider-Man to be over. Like, well, legitimately cannot wait. Joe Kelly and Justina Ireland are taking over starting in October, I think. They're doing a storyline called The Eight Deaths of Spider-Man. I'm like, checking my watch, counting the hours until this is done, because this does not work. Batman, Gotham by Gaslight, the Kryptonian Age number 2 from DC Comics, written by Andy Diggle, art by Leandro Fernandez. This is a Victorian era Batman. In this issue, we're getting a lot of other characters, and this is kind of bring to bear my biggest fear with this title, frankly, is that it was going to be like a Dark Knight Returns 2, where versus following the main character, Batman, we start throwing in a bunch of other stuff. We haven't gotten Superman yet, but spoiler, we get Wonder Woman here and their take on that. I don't know. Really good art.
Amazing art. Great. Amaze balls.
Yes. It feels very like mixed between, halfway between Frank Miller and Mike Mignola, I would say. Mm. Mm. And I like that. I just don't need the rest of it.
Well, I think that the art does such an amazing job of pulling you into this kind of different kind of world. Also, I love the, you know, and again, spoilers, but the Constantine that we got in this is fun. The Bat versus Talia train fight was really awesome. And, you know, Wonder Woman has a fantastic entrance at the end. But I just think that I understand what you're saying, but we also got like a lot of cool shit, so I'm not going to be mad at it. But, yeah, this is artistically worth it.
Geiger, number 4 from Image Comics, written by Jeff Johns, art by Gary Frank. We are getting our Radioactive Man and his squire are heading to the organ people who steal organs in this post-apocalyptic world. And they are doing some heroic stuff. They are trying to save some folks. I think this new run on Geiger, since they have switched over to Ghost Machine, has given it such a new lease on life. Like, Justin's very frequent thing has been that it's spinning its wheels in terms of Geiger's family is behind the door. He is bummed about that. The End. This is Finding New Modes, is pushing the story forward. You got your Gary Frank art. I'm very into it.
Yeah, I don't know about what Justin was saying, but I do think this is an amazing team. I also, I love this issue here. You know, apparently these bad guys have never seen John Wick, because you don't mess with someone's fucking monster dog. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I mean, you fucking do not do that. And yeah, I'm excited for what's to come. Yeah, this is just action-packed and a solid issue. So yeah, I very much enjoyed this.
Daredevil number 11 from Marvel, written by Saladin Ahmed, art by Aaron Cooter. Daredevil was thrown down an elevator shaft last issue by Kingpin, who, as we find out by the end of the issue, though I think everybody kind of knew this, is taken over by Greed, one of the seven deadly sins. He is trying to recuperate with Elektra over the course of this issue. At the same time, Bullseye is torturing a young kid who knows that Daredevil is Matt Murdock. It's great to have Aaron Cooter back on this. I just love his art, but I still don't know about this run.
I hear you. Yeah, I also agree that the art is absolutely fantastic. But I enjoyed this issue a little bit more than you. I don't know what's going on with, like, Daredevil really being trying to live his priest life, and then also having the Kingpin kind of be the devil seems a little crazy. But Elektra is just such an amazing partner in this, and I don't think Daredevil deserves her. But man, she is just phenomenal in this. And I like the kid story that we're getting here, because it's more complicated than just like a kid knows a secret and will Bullseye like get it out of him. There's a little bit more layers to it. So I think they're doing a great job with that. But man, what a kind of scary premise of Bullseye being left alone with a child. So like, I think it motivates Murdoch in a way that I think is great for the character. So I'm excited to see what's going to happen.
Monsters Are My Business, number 4 from Dark Horse Comics, written by Cullen Bunn, art by Patrick Piazza Lunga. This is the final issue of this series, which is pitting a bunch of monster hunters against a bunch of monsters.
Oh, I see what they did there.
Pete, I always am curious to hear your take on this title. What did you think?
Yeah, this is a blast. I really thought this is amazing art, great character design, tons of action, and monster blood. This delivers on its title, and it's just a great package. You got the buns on, and you know, you got yourself just phenomenal art. So this is a great team, and it seems like they're having a blast with this book, and it kind of shows. So
it really leaves it open for a second run, and I do hope they head there, because there's so much more to do with this world, and it is a fun one with its own mythology, so we'll see what happens. Outsiders number 9 from DC Comics, written by Jackson Lansing and Colin Kelly, art by Robert Carey. In this issue, we get the drummer and oh my gosh, I was going to say Batwing. Is that his name?
Yeah.
Sure. Well, whatever.
It's not the Signal, right?
Nope. Definitely okay, great. Not. Whatever it is, two characters are heading to a land where there's a giant cannon that could destroy the world. We're dealing with a lot of like weird continuity stuff here. I like this issue. I didn't like it as much as the Batwoman issue that happened last issue, but I appreciate the fact that we're bringing the team together, leading into the potential finale in a couple of issues' time.
Yeah, this is enjoyable. I like the Helmet of Fate yelling. I'm a sucker for that for some reason.
You love that.
Yeah.
What is that?
I don't know. It's just fun to me. Mm. And then Batman and the Helmet of Fate read a really old comic together. And I thought that was meta and beautiful. And then, you know, spoilers, but Beast Boys, you know, really comes through at the end there. And I, great times, great artwork. I thought this was enjoyable.
Cool. I feel like you read a different comic book than I did based on everything that you just said, but why don't we move on and talk about Precious Metal number 2 from Image Comics, written by Tarsi von Poelgeest, art by Ian Bertram. This is a prequel to Little Bird, one of our favorite comic books here on the show, dude. And we are continuing to deal with some big war stuff, some big religious stuff. As usual, Ian Bertram's art is next level in this issue, particularly with these battle scenes that happen in the second half of the issue. They're wild.
Yeah, I mean, not to be a broken record here, but, you know, this is worth it for the art alone. I say this all the time with this artist, but so impressive, the world that is created here. It's tripped out. It's futuristic. It's just so amazing. I don't have the words, but I it's worth it. It's really worth it to kind of go and look at this. And I get lost in the art so much. I'm like, oh yeah, I'm supposed to be reading, but it's just it's great. It's really great.
Get Fury number 3 from Marvel, written by Garth Ennis, art by Jason Burrows. Frank Castle is closing in on Nick Fury, who has been captured in the Hanoi Hotel back in the Vietnam War. Frank Castle is dealing with some issues of his own. As usual with this book, Garth Ennis knows how to write a war book. Jason Burrows knows how to draw a war book. So there's some violent stuff. There's some gross stuff. But just well characterized and good.
Yeah. A great cover, great package. You know what you're getting, as we kind of said before, when you have Ennis on a title. And they deliver. I mean, I can't wait to the next issue. I mean, Castle and Fury together. I mean, come on, what a pair. Throwing dudes under buses, man. That's some gross shit. But this is good times.
That was extremely gross. Profane number 2 from Boom Studios, written by Peter Milligan, art by Raul Fernandez. We are following a detective who knows he is a fictional character and has come through the real world and is trying to figure out the mystery of who killed his author. I like this issue better than the first issue. I thought the first issue was a fair amount of good but rote setup. Here we're really getting into the beat of the mythology of this world, and I thought it was great.
Yeah, I agree. This is awesome. Amazing art. Gets maybe a little bit too meta for my taste, but great story, fun twists and turns, great team, great package. I do want more swearing, you know?
Because it's profane.
Yeah.
Interesting. This reminds me a bit of Unwritten, the Mike Carey Vertigo series from back in the day, just in terms of its meta-ness. It's a very different plot, very different characters. But
very different style of art as well.
Yeah, but at the same time, it feels like of a piece in terms of what it's saying about fiction. Falling in Love on the Path to Hell, number 2 from Image Comics, written by Jerry Duggan, art by Gary Brown. In this, we are following a bunch of merciless killers who are sent to an island in purgatory where they all have to battle the undead. Pete, that seems right up your alley. Take it away.
Yeah, I mean, this is fun. I mean, first off, tons of action, amazing art. What's not to love here? I love this kind of welcome to hell. This is kind of a an interesting version of this kind of hell landscape, but also where maybe you have a cucumber. I'm losing it here, but it's definitely one of those things where, if they're going to fall in love, I love the start of this. So I'm on board as the person who roots for rom-coms the most.
Yeah, I need to read the next issue of this to really get on board. There's been a lot of setup so far, but I really like Gary Brown's art. And like you said, I want to get to the romance thing. We're not quite there yet. So.
Yeah, not what, but that, you know, it's there. There's the starts of it for sure.
Yeah. See what happens. Yeah, X-Men, Heir of Apocalypse, number 3 from Marvel, written by Steve Fox, art by Netho Diaz. Apocalypse is holding a tournament to discover who is going to be his heir, per the title. And we are down to a couple of candidates by the end of this issue. This is surprisingly less focused Hunger Games than I thought it was going to be, but I don't know. I'm having an all right time.
Yeah, I think this is fun. Has kind of the I love the, you know, feel from you know, it's got the same kind of font and everything for Age of Apocalypse. So nostalgia factor is high for me. So, you know, Angel and Apoc going, you know, talking and you know, I think that, you know, obviously Sinister is going to betray some people and that's just going to happen. But, yeah, I felt like this was a fun X-Men story.
My one qualm about this is that similar to how we were talking about X-Men number one, it's like, just put it behind you. I don't, if we're past the Krakoa era, we don't need a bridge here. I don't need to know who Apocalypse's heir is. This feels like an unnecessary series if we're right wiping the slate clean. So that's a little bit of a bummer, but we'll see what happens. Crocodile Black, number 3 from Boom Studios, written by Philip Kennedy Johnson. Once again, art by Sam. We are following a dude who is wearing some crocodile boots and killing people. Pete, take it away.
Yeah, the boots are a super important part there. Yeah, wholly messed up violent story here. A lot going on. It's an original story, though. Great art. I'm excited to kind of read more, but kind of an interesting start here from Philip Kennedy Johnson. So I'm intrigued. I'm in.
Sam's psychedelic art is the real standout of this issue and this series for me, as our main character's psyche continues to degrade. It is depicting it in this wild, unnerving way. So good stuff. It's not like any other crime book that I think I've ever read, and I'm very intrigued to see what happens next. Last but not least, let's talk about Five Stones by E. Adam Ferris. This was sent to us by a friend of the show. It is a retelling of the David and Goliath story in comic book form. Well, this was a very nicely done retelling. What did you think, Pete?
Yeah, I thought that I started reading. I was like, whoa, this is super religious, bro. You know what I mean? Like really leaning into the vibes. But yeah, I felt like this was a kind of a fun, kind of like heroed up version of, you know, David versus Goliath, and kind of a, you know, like they bulked things up, made them kind of more like evil monster type stuff. So I thought it was an interesting kind of take on these characters that are so like already etched in people's minds. So it's always fun to see what people do with kind of stuff that is so kind of out there, you know? So, yeah, but, you know, heads up, it's pretty religious.
There you go. If you want to check it out online. Once again, it's called Five Stones. And that is it. If you'd like to support this podcast and all the podcasts,
great,
we do
art,
Patreon.
Though.
Yeah, very fun art. Patreon.com/comicbookclub to support this show and all the shows we do. Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice to subscribe and listen to the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter/X, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.